This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me once again this week is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I noticed that you brought along the Sluggo Cola tonight.
Well, you know, Chris, I've been doing my Bajoran Spring Wine business, and Grand Exec was so kind to send me some Sluggo Cola. He's been trying to introduce it to the States here. Really not taking off that well since not a lot of Ferengi customers, and most people really can't get past the gag reflex when they first taste Sluggo Cola. It's just not something that most people can acquire a taste for. And so,
right.
Luckily, I had Crusher inject me with a nice hypo spray of some anti-vomit medication. So I'm able to stomach it, and I'm trying to build up a nice level of tolerance for it, because I really don't want to piss off Zach. He's helping me with his spring wine business, and he's giving me a really good deal on shipping, strangely enough.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, it's for the sake of profit, for the sake of business, you need to learn to drink Sluggo Cola, because it's going to
exactly.
Come handy.
When you're doing business with the Ferengi, it's best to show a little deference to them. They don't get a lot of that in the Alpha Quadrant here,
right.
So I find that it actually has really helped my relationship with Zek. So I do what I can.
All right. Well, you can keep all the Sluggo Cola for yourself if you want, because me personally, I'm more of an Eelwasser man. It tastes like eel.
Yeah, it does. It actually does. That's the one. Sluggo Cola, I can get past. The Eelwasser is a little bit much for me. I haven't really tried working on that yet. I think Crusher is going to have to up the dosage on that anti-vomit medication for me.
I'll just say, if people think that the cola wars here on Earth between Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola have been tough, you've seen nothing until you've been to Ferenginar and seeing the commercials for Sluggo Cola versus Eelwasser.
Well, in the billboard space that they've created there, in Ferenginar, you think it's bad here, or say in Japan where there's neon signs everywhere. On Ferenginar, it's worse. I mean, you literally, it's like that Seinfeld Kenny Rogers chicken episode,
that
except
is the best
worse.
Episode.
Yes, so be careful on Ferenginar. Man. If you're going to visit, I would suggest that you bring one of those, Harry Kim banners for over your eyes as you sleep, because, wow, that place is like a light bulb.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Sluggo Cola and Eelwasser and such today, because we're going to talk about the Ferengi, but we're going to talk about them in terms of Ferengi values versus Federation values. And of course, there's also the twist of Ferengi values versus our own values, 20th, 21st century humans versus 24th century humans that we see in Star Trek. And the Ferengi, of course, because of the Last Outpost and the way they were used on the Next Generation, the Ferengi were really viewed very badly by fans, and I know a lot of Deep Space Nine fans skip over the Ferengi episodes. They really don't care for the Ferengi. But Ira Steven Bear made a really good point about the Ferengi on the DVD sets. I believe it was on the special features of the DVDs for season two. He said that the Ferengi, even more than O'Brien, are the closest to 20th century human beings on the show. They're us. They have the energy of 20th century human beings. They have the drive. They have the greed, which is very important, I think. And they have the sense of self that we do. You can't trust them until you can trust them. And once you understand them, they're quite wonderful. And like us, they're constantly rising above their limitations. And I think that what Iris said there, for me anyway, is pretty spot on, Matthew, in how I read the Ferengi and DS9. Now, they're not my favorite alien. There are some episodes where I would certainly prefer to watch a different episode than the Ferengi episode.
Prophet and Lace.
That's the one I was thinking of, Prophet and Lace, especially. It's the Deep Space Nine Bosom Buddies episode. But I think Ira has a really good point here that when I watch the Ferengi, I don't see this crazy alien race that's just driven by profit. I actually see a representation of who we are right now played against what Gene Roddenberry wanted us to become, you know, hopes that we'll become in the 24th century, where we're more evolved as a society.
Yeah, Chris, I think for me, you know, watching through and looking at the Ferengi, what I really see is this idea of a civilization that's truly okay with living with the idea that it is survival of the fittest. So you do what you need to do to get ahead, and we are going to live this way. In fact, you know, not only will we think about that and say a scientific and a philosophical terms, but we're also create a religion that allows us to do that as well. So everything is built towards this idea that it really is, we are here to service ourselves. We are only here for a short time. So you do what you need to do to get ahead, and that's what matters. And, you know, I think truly living out that the philosophy that comes from, you know, an evolutionary scientific idea that we are here from an accident. And so therefore, it's the strong that survive, and they truly live that out, which I applaud them for, honestly, because it's an authentic representation of that they are willing to live out the value that they see in life, which is there isn't a lot of value other than what you create for yourself until you die.
Right.
And, you know, that's a very authentic representation of survival of the fittest. I think the Ferengi values do a great job of living that out. And I think we bristle at that because we realize that's unsustainable. We realize that there's something wrong with that.
Right.
Which to me, as somebody who believes in God and a spiritual life and all those things, I believe it's wrong because there is something better. There's something greater for us. And there's a higher standard which we're supposed to live than just whatever it is that we make up for ourselves. And so I think that's a really, to me, that's one of those reasons why people don't necessarily, I don't think, understand why they don't like the Ferengi, but it's just built into us because it's something in the way that we're created.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. You know, I think when we look at Star Trek, we look at the 24th century, we look at the humans, and for those of us who, and I think most Star Trek fans are like this, it's the reason we like Star Trek, is that we look at the world around us today and we think that there has to be something better as a society than what we're doing right now. You know, with the wars, with the greed, with the poverty, with all the troubles of the world, there has to be something better. And so we see that future and we aspire to reach that. But like you said, what the Ferengi represent is sort of a pure line of how life would evolve, because the ultimate goal of a life form is to reproduce and to pass your genetic information to another generation. And it's not even, I think, that the goal of a life form is for the species itself to reproduce. It's for you to reproduce. Like, that life form wants to pass its information on to the next generation. Therefore, you have the survival of the fittest. You do what you can do to survive, not necessarily what you can do so that the species itself survives and you sacrifice yourself. Now, that's a more noble goal. And as society evolves, we start to think that way, right? Like, we want to do things for the good of everyone, not just ourselves. But I think that's an unnatural way of thinking. We have to gradually evolve towards that, because it's sort of, it's unnatural for life on a basic level. But our brains and our consciousness allow us to view things in that way. And so, looking at Star Trek and looking at Deep Space Nine and the Ferengi and the humans here sort of represents this tug of war between natural evolution and Gene Roddenberry's vision. And again, the Ferengi represent us and where we are now. The humans, the Federation, represent where we want to go. And it is that tug of war. But another question, okay, while we're talking about if something is sustainable or not. So I agree, like, this sort of greed, profit-driven society, that's not sustainable. We see that in the world today, especially what happened in 2008 with the crash of the financial market.
Right.
Where the banks, there was so much greed, and we see what can happen, where that can lead us. At the same time, there has to be a balance between the people taking care of themselves and the society taking care of everyone, whereas the Federation sort of represents the idea that the state will take care of everyone. It's like a state-supported society on a grand scale, but they don't use money, so
right,
you know, where are the resources coming from? But I also feel in a way that the Federation itself is also an unsustainable model.
Yeah, you know, it's a really hard thing, because you are... Star Trek does this thing where it combines idealistic philosophy with economics to try and create a better world that we all have this desire for. I liked what you said, you know, this, you know... The Ferengi, yeah, that this kind of this pure line of evolutionary desire that's just built into everyone, which is to exist and to survive and to procreate. That's really the basic function. But and yet, intrinsically, every human was built with some other desire that there's got to be something better. And I like that what you said. And this really reminds me, you know, when C.S. Lewis talks about this idea, you know, that, you know, if we find in ourselves a desire for nothing that this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we're made for another world. And yet Roddenberry rejects any earthly religion to create a philosophy that he wants. You know, it makes him unbeholden to anything. And yet it also gives him the desired outcome that he would like to see. Without any kind of, you know, I'm not beholden to a god or anything like that. And it's a fantastic idea, but the fact that he has the idea in the first place, to me, is just a representation that he has a desire for something that's built into him that has nothing to do with like an evolutionary idea. It's
right.
We all have it. And it's one of those things with that for me, that the tug of war, that I love Star Trek because I love part of its idea, but I also I can see the flaw, which is, for me, it's missing the heart of the matter. You can't have this unless you want to admit that you're really longing for something that's creatively built into you by a god who did create you for a reason, and that's why you think that there's something better. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's that tug of war, and it's really interesting to watch these two go at it, because we, in the end, we look at the Ferengi and we bristle at them because we don't like being reminded that if we lived our lives evolutionary wise and that was all there was, you end up with nihilism. But we know that that's unsustainable and that's wrong. So we mm-hmm. want something more. What is it? And this is where you get this tug of war, which is great in Deep Space Nine with the Ferengi and the Federation going back and forth. And I think it's really interesting to just watch that struggle happen.
Right. You know, it's interesting that I think we get to the same place here, because those who listen to the show regularly know that you have a very strong faith and I am atheist, but I think that we get to the same place in terms of wanting more. You know, you said that we want more because there's something more that was put there by God that you want to seek. And I think even if you're not of religious faith, the same thing is true in that the complexity of our mind creates that as well. If you want to look at it from a purely evolutionary standpoint, we end up in the same place, that there is something about the way that we are as sentient beings that goes beyond the straight line of evolution and makes us see that goal that Gene Roddenberry saw and makes us strive for it. I don't know if we'll ever get there, but I think that we're capable of it, which is also what makes Star Trek interesting and what makes especially Deep Space Nine, because you see the struggle that everyone goes through to maintain the lifestyle of the Federation. And that I think we're capable of it, but we have to choose to overcome a lot of things in order to get there. It's not going to just happen. And I think that's what you see compared with the Ferengi here, that the Ferengi, not only have they not chosen to overcome an unsustainable model of greed, but they've actually embraced it. And interestingly, they've embraced it in a way that has benefited them in some respects. You know, one thing about the Ferengi is that their society is very old. The Ferengi Alliance evolved over 10,000 years. Yet they don't have a history of atrocities like we have here on Earth. And it's something they're very proud of, but they found a way, using that straight line, to use the goal of seeking profit and material wealth to somehow stave off the types of conflicts and atrocities that have been so common in Earth's history.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting, I was thinking about this as you were talking, and this idea that what Roddenberry realized that he needed to do, and I think this is really where he came to and maybe got some of this, is that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And that if you can take care of people's physiological needs, their safety needs, you can allow them then to get to that love and belonging, that esteem, and then that self-actualization. And by creating the technology to be able to take care of all of people's basic needs, you, at least the hope is that you would create a society that would then be able to focus all of its benefits on loving each other, esteeming each other, and becoming self-actualized in a way that can't happen when people are still worried about their basic, you know, am I going to eat tonight? Or are we going to be safe? And so, you know, it's great when you can create technology that creates, you know, food out of magic, basically with replicators and things like that. Warp drive that gives us unlimited amount of power. You know, those are not things you have to worry about anymore. And obviously fight over anymore. I think it's just very interesting, you know, the Ferengi still come at it from, I think, a different place. You know, they've taken care of all their needs, but that insatiable greed of we know being human, it's never satiated. You know, people always want more. And, you know, it's kind of the reason that, you know, you have so many unhappy billionaires out there, because you realize you really can't buy intrinsic happiness. You know, you can buy enjoyment for a while, but you can't buy true happiness and joy. It doesn't come from stuff.
You know, that's what I was just thinking, that we say money can't buy you happiness. But in the case of the Ferengi, acquiring all this wealth allowed them to buy that technology that you were talking about. You know, warp drive. We know they purchased their warp technology. And I don't know if they've ever said this on the show or not, but I'm guessing, you know, pretty much everything, their holosuite technology, their replicator technology, is just stuff that they purchased from others. But those things make them happy. It allows them to acquire more, to bring in greater profit, and therefore have that safety and stability in the society. So maybe in the case of Ferengi, at least, money can buy you happiness.
Well, you know, the Beatles said you can't buy me love, but, you know, for a Ferengi, I guess that's not true.
That's not. All right. Well, let's go to a different topic here. And one, we see this play out a bit on Deep Space Nine, the idea of business and workers' rights amongst the Ferengi. On the show, we see it in Bar Association, where the workers go on strike. Quark has to face up with the idea of labor unions, and this is something that he cannot wrap his head around, because on Ferenginar, labor unions are forbidden. And I think that we agree, I think most people would agree, that workers need to have rights in the workplace, because if they don't, they will be exploited by the companies that they work for. You know, as you've said, as we've gone along here, ultimately, you do what you have to do to get ahead in life, because, you know, you're here for a short time and it is survival of the fittest. But at the same time, you know, there's some advice that Zek gives to Quark, actually, in The Negus, the episode The Negus. And he says, never trust anyone who places your prosperity above their own. And I found that interesting, because in a situation of survival of the fittest, you're always going to place your prosperity above someone else's prosperity. And in Ferengi society, everyone, by definition, if they are a good Ferengi, and I just did air quotes there, they're always placing their prosperity above that of others, which means you can't trust anyone in Ferengi society.
Which, I mean, it's funny, because in, let's say, the episode The Negus, when they're having their big meeting, you know, they're talking about how they're going to go into the Gamma Quadrant and their word can be their bond, at least until we break it. You know, I mean, they're so excited that they're going to get to swindle people, because ethically, it doesn't matter, because they've realized in a world, in a universe that is run by whatever it is that you desire. Anything goes. That's the ethic. Anything goes. So and rules are basically meant to be broken.
That scene, did that not, when you're watching that, aren't you just picturing the boardroom of any large bank or corporation in the world?
Enron.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what I was picturing. It's like we've ruined our name to all the customers in this market, so we can go to this new market. They don't know how bad we are yet.
Exactly.
They'll trust us. We'll give them our word until we break it. But
exactly.
But so this idea of labor unions, though, in terms of, now, if we talk about Ferengi values and Federation values, labor unions in the Federation, I mean, is that a thing? If there's no money...
You know, that's something that, you know, we never ever see, but it doesn't seem like there would be necessarily a need for them. I mean, obviously people go to work, they do work, you know, but, you know, nobody's really paid. They just kind of do what they're good at, unless you're in Starfleet. And honestly, at least in Starfleet, we do see that they get paid something, because they deal with cultures that that do exchange money, so right. Federation credits.
Yeah.
So there is some kind of exchange, and yet, you know, say somebody like Picard or, you know, a Cisco or whatnot, you know, they do their work because that's what they do. That's, you know, what they want to do for the betterment of their society, which is such a foreign idea to us. But, you know, right. again, when you're not having to worry about what you're going to eat or if you're going to be safe, you know, what would you do? You know, go out and explore, figure out what's out there, you know, do all that kind of thing. You could do that, you know, because you wouldn't have to be working for what it is that most of us work for, which is we work so that we can live.
Yeah.
You know, and whereas they live their work.
Right. You just pick something you're interested in.
Exactly.
And you just do that.
Yeah, like Jake wanting to be a writer, he can do that. He doesn't, yeah. I mean, he has no reason to worry about making money, but he has a talent, and so he cultivates it and then is able to put his work out there. So,
which is, of course, very, very idealistic, right? That you would be able to just.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, that you like, would just be able to live. And again, though, I mean, think about this. So, say Jake and Ben's dad owns a restaurant and he has people working for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did he have to, is that just been in the family for generations? Did they have to buy the building from somebody?
Right.
How do you build a, I mean, so you, there has to be some kind of
yes.
commerce going on. Right.
Yeah. This is the thing about there being no money in Star Trek. It's like, it's great to say, and it's great. It's to make the point that Picard made to Lily in First Contact, that we're not driven by money and the desire to acquire wealth anymore. We're driven to better ourselves and better society, but it can't function with no money. So even though they say there's no money in Star Trek, we know in outside of the Federation core, of course there's money. You see people exchanging it. I mean, you've got Latinum on Deep Space Nine. But even on Earth, I mean, there has to be some sort of commercial system, right? It's just, yeah, like you said, you have a building in New Orleans, and you're just going to go in and say, I'll just take that building. I'll just have a restaurant. You
or,
just bring
you know, I'm
me
going
ingredients.
To build a building here. So, you know, I'm going to build this building, and I'm going to, I'm just going to get some materials. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Where did he get the alligator that hangs from the ceiling? Did that just crawl into the restaurant one day and die, and then they stuffed it? Nah, he had to get that from somewhere.
Right.
Cut it at Gators R Us. Down there on Jackson Square.
Yeah, no, he just went and wrestled it and you know, killed right. it. And, okay. So.
Well, maybe he did. Maybe he did, yeah. So, okay, but the labor union thing, when I look at the Ferengi idea that labor unions are banned, and I talked about very early on when we started the discussion that in the Ferengi, I see the parallels of us, who we are right now. And something happened last year in the United States, which reminded me of the Ferengi approach to business and society. And in Michigan, which, you know, Detroit, Michigan, the U.S. auto industry, it's like the, you know, I know it's not what it was in the past because now cars are made all over the place. But if you think about a hotbed of labor union activity, obviously, auto manufacturers in the 20th century, that's a big place. And the Michigan legislature passing laws to cripple labor unions. When I saw it in the news, I was just astonished that this could even happen in a place like that. And it's, you know, it's presented in a way of like helping workers. It's presented in a way of, they call it right to work. And the idea is that it would be optional for union members to pay their dues. But of course, the real idea behind it is that you would cripple labor unions, because you can't just come out and say labor unions are illegal the way the Ferengi do, but you could cripple labor unions from inside by cutting off their funding internally by saying that you're helping workers so that they don't have to pay their dues if they don't want to. And therefore, the labor union's ability to conduct collective bargaining would be crippled, and therefore businesses would be better able to take advantage of the workers and seek profit, as Ferengi would. And I thought it was an interesting parallel to, if you read the Ferengi as both a representation of who we are now, as well as a warning of, and this is where I think the writers go with the Ferengi a lot of times. People see them as comic relief, but I actually think the Ferengi are more like a warning of, this is the road we're on, this is where it can lead if we follow it through to its, you know, logical conclusion of greed. And it was an interesting parallel to our current society and moves that we're making that actually take us a step closer to being the Ferengi.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, the whole idea of labor unions and you know, you can understand why the Ferengi would be so scared of them.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they really can hamper business if the workers' rights are more than the rights of the people that they work for.
Right.
So there has to be a balance. Obviously, the Ferengi have it all on the other side. You know, you take advantage of people that you work with. You can ask for sexual favors. I mean, all the things that we know you can't do because it's not intrinsically right. Again, the Ferengi doing a great job of really living out the truth of their value, which is we're here to service ourselves, and that's really what matters. And we laugh at it, but it's, you know, I think without the rules and regulations of society, when left to our own devices, we tend to choose what's easy and beneficial for just us, mm-hmm. and everybody else a lot of the time. It's very interesting to see that play out. And, you know, there's two sides to it, but somewhere, and I think this is one of those places that in a lot of life, but there's somewhere in the middle where those things meet. And that's where you find what's probably best for most people.
Right. And I think that's what we see play out on Deep Space Nine in this respect as well, that there is that tug of war between that. You know, because I'm on the fence on it myself. You know, I'm not a big fan of labor unions. I certainly see the purpose in them. I see the value in them, and I see the importance in them for protecting the workers. But just as on the business side, just as a company itself, corporate management or government as well, you know, as time goes on, it becomes more and more corrupt and more greed creeps in. The same thing happens with the labor unions, where the individual member, of course, they're in there to protect themselves and their family. And they, as individuals, I think generally have reasonable expectations of why they are in there. You know, they're not in there for greed. They're not in there to get everything they can possibly get from the company. They want to make sure that the company doesn't take advantage for them. But at the top of that, you end up with labor unions who seek concessions from the company that are unreasonable and that exceed the ability of the company to meet those, especially companies with enormous workforces where on an individual basis, yeah, it seems like what you're asking for is reasonable. But if you multiply it by tens of thousands, then it can cripple the company itself. And so I think you see harm there as well. So I'm really on the fence. I can see both sides of it. And I think, like you said, right, there has to be a balance there. And how do you strike that balance? And I think it's something that, like in bar association, it works better having it be the bar workers and be Lita, be the non-federation people. You know, you need them on the show to tell that story and to try to seek a balance in this discussion of workers' rights and labor equality, because the Federation, again, isn't well suited. It's another case where the Federation personnel on the station really are representing what we would look like at the finish line of that. Another thing that also kind of ties in, and when they brought Ishka on the show, I don't know, do you like Ishka? I'm just never a real big fan of Moogie myself.
You know, it's tough. I understand her her point in the plot, you know, and everything, yeah. But her character is grating. So yeah. I'm not her biggest fan.
Not a big fan of that either. But
right.
Women's rights, however, within Ferengi society is another interesting parallel for me with the Federation and with us today. It took Ishka to come in and really help Zek. What an odd couple too, right? Ishka and
yeah.
Zek.
I don't want to think about it.
What's going on?
Yeah.
When they're in a hollow suite or whatever. But anyway, she comes in and she helps usher through some reforms. What I find interesting, and it stays true to Ferengi society, is that so here on Earth these days, and it varies from culture to culture, but in most developed cultures now, women have rights that are much more equal with men than what we had during the 20th century, especially the first half or three quarters or so of the 20th century. But we reach that point by, as we were talking about earlier, you know, we're able to think kind of beyond the natural line of evolution and internal desires and see what makes more sense from an intellectual standpoint. And we realize that, you know, women have the same things to contribute that men have, and the society will function better if women have the right to do the same things and have the same opportunities. And so we reached that by following that train of thought, but Ferengi reach it by simply realizing that by excluding women from society the way they do, and in Ferengi society, women made up 53.5% of the population, they realize that they're missing a huge opportunity for profit. And it's a significant loss to business, and therefore they should start giving more rights to women.
Yeah, I think this is something that is just in some ways funny. I mean, the whole idea that Ferengi, you know, have their women subjugated to them.
Yeah.
They have to chew their food. They're not allowed to wear clothes. I mean, it's funny because it just seems like the chauvinistic male fantasy put on display for the galaxy.
But don't you think that from the writer's standpoint, that it's a way of showing how ridiculous it is to take women or any other group and view them in that way? It's like a satire. You're just taking it to the extreme.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Well, and again, I mean, even just the way that I've kind of talked about the Ferengi in general is they've taken the kind of the idea of survival of the fittest, and they live that to its nth degree, like where you end up if you really take that idea all the way down the line, which is, you know, a scary thought. This is where you'd actually end up if you live out this value as that's all there is. And they do that then with that whole idea of, you know, the way they treat their women. Which again, in some ways it makes sense that it doesn't for them. For the longest time, it doesn't matter because they're not thinking about it. It's funny, they're not thinking about it on that profit level. But the moment they bring up the idea of profit, yeah, it's blowing their minds. Why were we, you know, not having more and more people trying to get out there and give us profit?
Right.
When, you know, when we're losing all this profit, you know, well, and so.
And what was the justification for allowing Ferengi women to wear clothing? If they wear clothing, they have pockets.
They buy more stuff. Yep.
If they have pockets, they can put money in the pockets. Then they can go spend the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Which is a way, I mean, like, so if you're Ishka and you want to push this agenda, but you have to find a way to make it palatable to the society. That's how you do it. You say, look, okay, I know you don't like the idea of them wearing clothes and stuff, but think about all the pockets. I can just picture like women's fashions on Ferenginar, they're like cargo pants, or they've got like as many pockets as you can possibly throw onto something, right?
You're just giving women more and more pockets. I mean, the most amount of pockets possible.
Right. I can just picture that would be how businesses would take it on Ferenginar. That's how they would see the opportunity.
Right. Well, and it is, I think what's so interesting about it is that, it is very true. Like that's what you, would end up doing. I mean, you'd be wanting more and more people, to be able to get more and more profit, you know? So yeah, you let women wear clothes. Well, not only do they get to wear clothes, but then they have to buy the clothes. So somebody has to make them. That creates a whole new industry that gives you more profit, you know? So it's very funny that to think for so long that they had been missing out on an entire profit base on their own planet. Instead of having to go exploit other people, they could have just continued to exploit each other for a little bit longer.
Right. Yeah. So that's an interesting one. How they get to how they handle women and how the writers present it, because I do think that you know, the idea of you're missing a profit opportunity, let them wear clothes and then carry money and all. I mean, you can apply that to various segments of the market in our own world today, and how, you know, you see new products come out and new services come out, and it's just kind of like, well, you know, We this well has dried up. What can we do next?
Right.
And there we go. Another thing I did want to talk about briefly, and this is probably a topic for another show to really go into it, but is education, like a difference between education for the Ferengi and for the Federation. You know, Zek is just shocked that Rom is letting Nog go to a school that has humans in it and is being taught by a human. And the idea that Nog would be doing homework to learn about something other than business is just, it is shocking indeed. And what do you see in terms of just values of what's important in education between our Federation personnel and the Ferengi? And how that evolves too over the course of the series, because we really see Rom come around. We kind of see Quark come around a little bit, and we definitely see Nog kind of embrace the possibilities beyond those of his own culture.
Yeah, you know, this is what I thought was so interesting, is that they, you know, oh, he's going to school. But I'm thinking, well, but by going to school, he's going to learn all sorts of things that would be really helpful in business. I mean, he'll learn about mathematics. He'll learn about other cultures. I mean, what better way to exploit a culture than to know about it? And learn about it, just historically and philosophically and all those kind of things. So it seems so strange that they would devalue education like that when knowledge is really power when it comes to creating more profit and to being creative to create more profit. I mean, there really is no better way to have more profit than really understanding people and what it is that makes them tick. And what better way to do that than understand them historically, philosophically, you know, spiritually, all of these things, which create a way for you to, you know, make more money.
Well, even Quark sees the value in knowing people spiritually, because he has the Bajoran trinkets that he sells on the station. Yep. Yes. Yeah.
So I just thought that was very strange to me that they would have such an aversion to education. Yeah. Now, I think their aversion to the education had more to do with this idea of the values that they would be being taught than necessarily the education itself.
That's, I mean, how obviously I read it as well.
The whole episode, the Negus, begins with this idea that they're supposed to be doing an essay on ethics.
Yeah.
Well, that's a human idea. And so therefore, you know, and then of course, you know, Nog unethically lies about it and then drags, you know, Jake into the lie.
And so, what was the lie? The lie was that I don't have my homework because some Vulcans stole my homework because they don't have ethics.
Those damn Vulcans. Oh my gosh, they are the biggest thieves, and nobody thinks a Vulcan will steal anything. So
I know, and O'Brien, who's been around Vulcans for 20-something years, is like, wait a minute, Vulcans have no ethics, and they stole your homework. You expect me to believe that?
So you're saying that some Vulcans, those non-emotional Zen-like beings, so full of wisdom from Serac, stole your pad because it had an ethics essay on it,
and they
just
stole
had
it
to read it
because they don't have ethics. Which would be more believable to you, Matthew, if I told you as the teacher that I don't have my homework because some Vulcans stole it, or I don't have my homework because some Vulcans ate it? Which one would be more believable to you?
I think it's more believable to say, you know, that weird like puppet thing that Uncle Quark is holding later on in the episode that looks like some sort of like tree animal?
Yeah.
That ate my pad. That's more believable than some Vulcans.
Yeah. That's funny.
Which, sidebar, that whole scene, it's so The Godfather, it's awesome. Uh-huh. So, great job by that.
The other thing there is, you know that Armin Shimerman and Rene Abergenoi, they had worked together prior to Deep Space Nine, stage work together and all. That scene where Quark is standing there with the rod, and he tells Odo that you have to kiss my scepter. That is so like Armin and Renee cutting up.
Yes.
It's so funny.
And then you get that the great non-line, which is just from Odo.
I guess I'll make an exception for you.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
It's such a good line. But I think you're right. I think the aversion isn't to education per se. I think it's that the Negus knows that the Federation tries to minimize the idea of material wealth. And so he's fearful that, you know, any Ferengi who's in a school being taught by a human is going to be corrupted. And really, I mean, I think it's a valid, just playing Ferengi for a minute, if I'm a Ferengi, I think it would be a very valid concern, because look what happened to Nog over the course of the series. He joined Starfleet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Well, and I think this really gets us the idea, like, in the end, all of the main Ferengi turn into beings that are more like our Federation characters than they are Ferengi in the end. I mean,
right.
And Quark is still the one who holds on enough to still consider him Ferengi. But I mean, can you really consider Rom, even though he's the Grand Negus, a Ferengi when we think the idea Ferengi? No, not at all.
No.
He's a completely Federationized Ferengi. He's drunk the Kool-Aid, and now he's more like we are, air quotes, dink dink. And so I think that's so interesting, and that brings me to that question, I guess. You know, really, when we look at the Ferengi, is there anything, you know, redeeming about them? Especially when we watch all of our main Ferengi characters, even Zek, you know, and they all become more like, you know, our main Federation characters. So is there anything redeeming in that Ferengi, or is it really just being used as a mirror to hold up to us and say, we don't want to really be like this, do we?
Well, I think it is a mirror, but this is where I think it goes, because, and Quark is the best example, because Quark maintains who he is at his core, but he grows a heart, which we've talked about before here on the show.
He's like the Grinch.
He's like the Grinch, yes. His heart grew three sizes that day. I think where Quark ends up... And they sang anyway. So, I think where Quark ends up is... It's a case of the writers taking us, I think, and again, this may not really be what they were doing per se. I mean, to an extent, I think yes. But at least for me, what I got from this is that where Quark ends up is that medium that we talked about, where there has to be some sort of balance, because we talked about earlier on tonight that the Ferengi society, that's not a sustainable model. But the Federation society is also not a sustainable model. And Quark ends up being a mix of both. He maintains who he is as a Ferengi, his values that come from the survival of the fittest, but he also learns to take care of his friends, those who he cares about, to do things that are for the good of the ecosystem in which he lives, because that helps him survive as well. I mean, that's what we have to understand, where, you know, natural evolution may push us towards greed. We can go too far in trying to just do things to help the society and neglect ourselves. We have to find that balance, but it's important to take care of the ecosystem in which we live so that we can survive. We need both. And I think that's where Quark ends up there. And so I actually think that there's great value in the Ferengi as they're portrayed on Deep Space Nine. They're a great vehicle for commentary on the world that we live in today, and the world that Gene Roddenberry envisioned, and how we can marry those two together to create a world that's comfortable for us to live in, where we're happy, where we have the things that we need, and we can sustain that into the future.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think it is valid in the sense that really, I think, when we were talking at the beginning, Ferengi values, Federation values, that really, in the end, it would probably be something more in the middle. And, yeah. You know, and that's kind of more where Quark ends up. He still plays on the side of being a scheming and conniving person. When it comes down to the end, he usually has a heart. And that's a really good point. I think that it does wrap up really well that idea that there is something about the Ferengi that actually the Federation might be able to learn from, or in the end would be an honestly more sustainable future for us than mm-hmm. than say just the Federation in and of itself.
Yeah. And on the flip side, with Rom, as you said, he's a very Federationized Ferengi. With him going back to Ferenginar as the Grand Nagus, he also takes values back that, when combined with the Ferengi values, can also help Ferengi society to evolve into a more sustainable model. Yeah. Well, this has been actually more interesting than I thought it would be when we chose this topic, Matthew. I think we hit on some interesting points here as we kind of meandered through various aspects of the Ferengi, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Pitching a piece of the action movie.
I think we can definitely Transformers
though.
Planet doesn't work. They might go for that. Would you go for that, Drew?
I mean, personally, I would shy away from it, because then you'd be...
Or would you shy away it would from be, it?
You're a bad person.
Earl Grey.
William T. Riker.
Imagine now if he had come back with a goatee or mutton chops. We could have been a very different Riker.
Hipster Riker. Number one, are you wearing glasses?
No, it's Geordi's visor.
I'm reading a pad that you've never heard of before.
The Ready Room.
Inside a Lost Time with Mark Cushman.
But something else that you'll find out in book two is that they almost didn't have Leonard Nimoy and Mr. Spock for season two of Star Trek. His agent wanted more money for Leonard, and for good reason, because when he signed on to do the series, he was supposed to be a supporting actor. And yet he was getting more fan mail than even William Shatner, who was the star of the show. Yet only a fraction of the money.
The Orb.
Move along home as a TOS episode.
Sisko comparing First Contact to dating girls felt like something that Kirk would do as well. You know, teaching Charlie Evans about girls and Charlie X, something like that.
To the journey!
Voyager on Blu-ray.
I know that there's been some outtakes done because you can find clips of them on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be more. And I want to see them all.
Warp 5.
Andorians on Enterprise.
And so they took this idea where they had antenna, and they took this idea where they were blue and from someplace cold, or I don't even know if they were someplace cold when they were on the TOS, and they just made everything better.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear recap.
I think when you look at the work that was done on Deep Space Nine, what becomes apparent is a group of people who do not feel like they need to do what the original series did in order to accomplish what the original series accomplished.
Melodic Treks.
Apparently, at one point, Patrick Stewart felt he might be able to actually play on screen himself, although it was delicately pointed out to him by Bryce Martin that he wasn't up to that standard quite yet.
Literary Treks.
Peaceable Kingdoms with Peyton Ward.
I don't really remember why I was the one chosen to bat cleanup, other than the fact that I think Margaret, our editor, wanted Picard and the Enterprise E to factor into the final installment, and she had already tapped me to write that story.
Matter Stream.
Star Trek Axanar with Alec Peters and Richard Hatch.
If you've ever experienced war or any kind of conflict where everything is life and death, there's a certain kind of resolve, truth, experience that you come to that I don't think too many people can understand or ever really, really empathize with.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download or stream from the website, and you'll find links to everything on the site at trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. So go grab the shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. And Matthew, I am curious here. We touched on a few points here today, which I'll be surprised if they don't stir up a little bit of feedback. A couple of controversial topics that we talked about today. If you'd like to share your thoughts on what we talked about today, you could do that in a variety of ways. You can go to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, and we would love to hear your voice. Or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about the show, about Deep Space Nine, about anything you want to talk about in the world of Star Trek. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook.com/TrekFM and on Twitter under username TrekFM, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek. Now, Matthew, when you're not in that writer's room trying to come up with the next great slogan for Sluggo Cola, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I just tweet about all sorts of different things. You can't pigeonhole me. Of course, big game for me this week, and my 49ers are playing.
So, oh, that's right.
If we win, we go to the Super Bowl for the second year in a row. So,
and if you lose, you go to the bar and you drink a whole bottle of whiskey, right?
Something like that, yeah. Actually, that's pretty close.
I'll be cheering for you, though. You may not know it, but actually here in the studio, I actually do have a San Francisco 49ers trash can sitting right over here by my desk.
Oh, excellent. Because excellent. We've got that in common. We're both SEC boys, now. So we've got that as well, even though a different team. So, and then, too, if you'd like to find me, you can also check me out with Chris when we do Literary Treks, books, and comics. We've got great stuff. Just finished up the fall series, which has involved a lot of Deep Space Nine characters. We've had all the authors on, so check out those shows. We got some great surprises coming up for you in the future. And so if you are a big fan of the 24th century, honestly, books and comics are the only place to find that now. And so join us there. And then, of course, I do have my own personal blog. So if you just want to get to know me more or just some of the ideas that we may have talked about today, some of those kind of things I've touched on in my own personal blog. So that's 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you are not hanging out at the bar with Quark and finding ways to just make Morn laugh like crazy, where can we find you?
Yeah, I have a great stock of Andorian jokes, and Morn loves them all.
He really does. I mean, the guy, it takes him a little while to get the punchline, but it's funny
right.
when he finally does. So
that's right, yeah. Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And here on the network, besides doing literary treks with you, Matthew, you can find me on The Ready Room every week with hosts from all across the network, as well as other special guests as we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series and Star Trek news. You can also find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. And you can find me on my interview show, Matterstream, where I talk to writers and actors and designers and scientists, all sorts of creative people, about topics that are either inspired by Star Trek or loosely connected to Star Trek. And on my most recent episode, I have Alec Peters, who is the founder of PropWorks, and also Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, who everyone knows as Apollo on the original and Tom Zarek on the new series. And they're doing a new project called Star Trek Axanar. And what's interesting to Deep Space Nine fans in this is that J.G. Hertzler is joining the cast and is going to be playing a Starfleet captain in Star Trek Axanar. So if you go over to trek.fm/ms, catch that episode. It's called The Reluctant Warrior. You can actually hear all about that project and what's going on there. Very, very interesting. And one more thing before we let you go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor for today's show. Our sponsor makes it possible for us to bring the Orb to you every week. And the sponsor for today's show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks. They have more than 150,000 titles available on the site. They're adding more all the time, really hundreds every week being added to the catalog. And if you love podcasts, you're going to love Audible, because you can take all those books that you've always wanted to read, but you never thought you'd have time for, because let's face it, as much as we like to read, and you know, Matthew and I, you know, we do literary treks together, Matthew, and we both struggle to find time to read. You read a lot more yes. than I do, but still. You know, it's hard to sit down, but with audiobooks, you can put them on just like you do podcasts. You can listen on your way to work, as you clean the house, as you exercise. And they have a lot of Star Trek books on there as well. And the one I would recommend today, after this discussion of the Ferengi, is Deep Space Nine, Legends of the Ferengi by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewart Wolf. And it's narrated by none other than Armin Shimerman. And if you want to know more about the background of the Ferengi, it's a really great book for you to grab, and you can get it absolutely free as a Trek FM listener just by signing up for a trial of Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Choose this book or any other book that you want as your free audiobook. And if you decide not to stick with Audible after the trial, this book is still yours to keep. So there's nothing to lose, and you'll be helping us keep the Orb coming to you every week. So again, go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today, and we really thank Audible for their support of the Orb. One more thing you can do is go to trek.fm/donate, where we have aliens available. We have 8 different aliens. They're original illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. And you can mix and match. You can get them as badges or art prints. We have different levels of contributions for you to choose from. And your donations help us pay for the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the Orb to you every week. So we really thank you for helping us keep the network going.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.
Recording. Grandigas Zek's profitable pants.
Oh, I don't want to have anything to do with his pants.
Really?
When he was like up in the hollow suites, and you hear that sound all the way downstairs in that loud room, and you hear that, you're like, oh my God, I do not want to know what he's doing up there.
I'm telling you, CBS is missing a huge opportunity for profit by not releasing a Grand Nagus Zek ringtone for smartphones.
God. Yeah, that would be the world's most obnoxious ringtone. In fact, they probably don't do it because they're worried that it will crack the screen right. of your like smartphone. It will crack the glass.
Well, imagine you're at the ballet or you're at a concert and you forgot to put your phone in manner mode and write in a very soft part.
You're like, yeah, you're at the symphony and it's that slow part of some Beethoven movement that's beautiful and all of a sudden you get... Oh God, it would be horrible.
Oh goodness. And then the next time you come to the concert hall, there's a big poster where it has like no phone, has a picture of a phone and a red mark through it. It's got a picture of Grand Nagus Zek and it's got that red circle with a line through it over the base.
Yeah, I would do it. That's funny.
You're talking about his pants and you don't want anything to do with his profitable pants. I bet he wears gold-plated Depends.
Oh, God. I don't want to clean that out. Poor Mehardu. Man.
Oh, man.
That is one All dedicated right. servant right there.
Right. All right. Okay, I'll lead us into the show.